Good morning, Your Honors. Counsel, may it please the Court. The question presented in this case is whether the plaintiff, at all relevant times, a 6-year-old boy, stated a cause of action for violation of the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause under a Class of One theory, and whether the District Court erred when it dismissed that claim and plaintiff's Monell claims as well. The District Court erred in dismissing plaintiff's Equal Protection claim because there was no rational basis for the utter persecution to which the defendant subjected the plaintiff. The district court found, and the defendant argues, that the defendant's actions were constitutional because the mother made a complaint based on what she thought she saw, which eventually all wound up in the defendant's laps. However, due to the malicious motives of political appeasement and vengeance, the defendants took what might have been handled in a rational manner and tormented the 6-year-old DB beyond any realm of rationality. Of course, shortly after the quote-unquote investigation started, the defendants knew that the alleged quote-unquote victims were participants in the activities and had been playing the same doctor games with DB. However, once the defendants knew this, they had to persecute DB and make him the ringleader in order to keep the other children out of it, the children being the children of a high-ranking local political official and the niece and nephew of another high-ranking state official. Likewise, the defendants needed DB to confess so that the other children's activities would not come to light and DB alone would be punished. By refusing, through his parents, to confess, DB unknowingly brought the further animus of the defendants on himself by concocting more alleged wrongful behavior and referring even more serious charges to the prosecutor.
If I could clarify something about what occurred here, repeatedly in your complaint and in the briefing in this case, facts are alleged to be that the child was charged with a felony, a first-degree sexual assault, a Class B felony in Wisconsin, and that is legally impossible. Children can't be charged with felonies. The age of delinquency in Wisconsin is 10, last time I checked, and at most this was a CHIPS petition, right, a Child in Need of Protection Services petition. It was filed to get the child social services.
In short, that's correct. In length, while it appeared on the surface that that's what this was, in reality, it was prosecuted as if it was a felony case.
Delinquency cases, even if this were a delinquency case, aren't prosecuted. That's not the right term of art to use, and certainly CHIPS petitions aren't either. They're children's court proceedings that are closed to the public and, you know, as a matter of law in Wisconsin, and the petition in a CHIPS case seeks services for the child, public services for the child. It's not accusatory, let me put it that way. A juvenile delinquency petition is accusatory, but it puts the child into the, you know, the children's court delinquency proceedings, and there's a separate section of the code that deals with that and the kinds of punishments that can be meted out, and they're not even considered punishments. But in this case, since this child was under 10, at most this could have been a CHIPS petition. It's not clear because it's not called that in the complaint. It's called a prosecution and a criminal charge for a Class B felony, which it cannot possibly have been under Wisconsin law.
Oh, Your Honor, I believe that the case was we'll say proceeded as a CHIPS petition, a juvenile in need of protective services. For purposes of the equal protection claim, though, I believe that it truly is a distinction without a difference. For starters, this became very public. It might have been supposed to be a closed proceeding, but it wasn't. It became very, very public. DB was ostracized at his school. The defendant went. Defendant Kopp went to DB school, asking questions about him, making clear what was what was going on. The defendant Kopp started talking to anybody else to try and pile on more, to refer more charges to the prosecutor against DB.
Well,
so
there's that word again, charge. As I understand Wisconsin law, that's not what this is. I mean, there may have been a factual basis for the CHIPS petition, but not a criminal charge. And you're trying to bring yourself within the selective prosecution case law for class of one equal protection purposes, as I understand the conceptualization of your claim here. So, I mean, this child isn't being singled out for punishment. There's a complaint to social services. It's investigated by the social services folks and then referred to the local prosecutor, which is the agency with statutory authority to bring this sort of petition for social services, and then the petition is brought, and then later there's a consent decree and a dismissal. So, this may not make any difference for purposes of the class of one equal protection analysis, but I think we ought to be precise about what's going on here.
Then, with that said, Your Honor, I think that is largely a fair statement. However, DB...
Why did you plead it the way you did? If you're conceding that what I've said is the correct characterization of what actually happened here.
Because, Your Honor, DB repeatedly received summonses, notices to appear in court, threatened with incarceration if he did not appear. He was still accused of committing the acts of sexual assault, later of disorderly conduct, even though the defendant, Moravitz, had said to the prosecutor he actually should be charged with more sexual assault claims. It later turned into disorderly conduct. Whether we call them charges or a petition with these offenses in them, he was accused of these offenses and brought into the court system. Again, whether or not we're talking about the adult court system or the juvenile court system, I don't believe makes a difference for the equal protection claim.
How old were the other two kids?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
You said the other two kids were each five. Were they twins?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So then was it pretty known to everybody that these were twins, meaning the public? There's not very many twins. That's all I'm saying.
I put
people's initials supposedly to...
Well,
I don't understand even with another thing that you all made about a social worker who investigated and said, we really don't have anything in here, and then Moravitz intervened and went forward with it. She was a superior to that social worker, I presume.
Correct. Well, the defendants, I think, will dispute that, and whether or not Moravitz actually had supervisory authority or just acted as if she had supervisory authority in this particular instance, I think is a fact that we would like to bear out in discovery. But Moravitz took over this case from the original investigator who was going to close the book on it. I think the key to this is that the court found that there was a rational basis in the basis of the mother's complaint. There is a point when rational basis stops. In this case, had the defendants just looked into it, made a phone call, given someone a talking to, there probably would be no case here. But the defendants didn't do that. Even after interviewing the other two children, the twins, we'll call them, and knowing that this wasn't the DB wasn't a sexual predator, this was just little kids being little kids, they still, nonetheless, proverbially put the boot of the state down on this child. And this child, as would come out again in discovery, is alleged in our complaint. This kid suffered emotional torment and physical manifestations and is still, in fact, suffering today. We believe the complaint stated a cause of action for the equal protection of Monell, and we ask that the district court be reversed. I was going to reserve some time for rebuttal.
That's fine. I'll give you time.
Thank you.
We kept you standing up there. Mr. Hall.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. The plaintiff's equal protection claims were properly dismissed by the district court under any of the standards outlined by this court in Del Marcel. The second amended complaint failed to eliminate at least three conceivable rational bases and at least three official justifications. In this case, the district court relied on one, and that was that the conduct of DB was observed by an adult, whereas the alleged conduct of the twins was not observed by an adult. The second is that DB was never presented for interview. DB was never presented to the police department, was never presented to social services for interview, whereas the other two children were. And finally, over the course of the investigation that took place here, the officials learned of additional behavior, additional acts on the part of DB involving inappropriate sexual contact with DB's babysitter. The development of those three additional factors, we would submit, amounts to a rational basis and also an official justification as what the under Judge Posner's opinion in Del Marcel. I think there's also overlap when you turn to the issue of the similarly situated comparator. In this case, to establish a class of one claim, the plaintiffs need to allege a similarly situated comparator, and I think they allege that the twins are their comparator. Well, for the same three reasons that, for the same three rational bases, they're also not similarly situated comparators. Again, DB's conduct was witnessed and observed by an adult, whereas the twins' alleged conduct was not. The twins were presented to social services and to law enforcement for an interview and for evaluation. You know, this isn't just meant to target a young child. In all of these cases, there's concern that the child himself or herself may, in essence, be a victim themselves and just acting out on something that they've had done to them. So from the law enforcement and social services perspective, it's important to have that interview. It's important to have that evaluation. And again, DB was never presented for that. The twins were.
Is that within the confines of the pleadings? Do we
know
that?
Okay. Yes, Your Honor. We know from page 7, paragraph 14 of the second amended complaint, we know that the mother observed whatever it was that occurred. You know, the mother basically walked in on the kids playing doctor. We know that that the twins were permitted to be interviewed and evaluated on page 8 of the second amended complaint, paragraph 19, and the corroborating evidence that comes from the babysitter we know from paragraph 33 of the second amended complaint. And so, again, under this court's rulings, and I think nationally, you know, there's a requirement that the similarly situated comparator be prima facie identical in all material respects. And I think in this case, based on the pleadings, we're not there yet. Finally, turning to perhaps more bigger picture items with the class of one cause of action than perhaps the court will need to get to in this case, we think that this case presents a perfect example of a case that with a more specific constitutional provision that should govern the claims and the allegations raised here. In this case, the second amended complaint contained a litany of allegations, contained a litany of causes of action, including Fourth Amendment. And we would submit to the court that under this court's prior ruling in Holman versus Page, which addressed an effort to use the Equal Protection Clause to invalidate prison sentencing, that again, The Fourth Amendment should really be what governs this case. If through the investigation and the referral of the CHIPS petition to authorities, if through that investigation there was no constitutional deprivation, there was no Fourth Amendment violation.
What's the Fourth Amendment issue? What does it turn on? Was there a seizure? The child was not arrested.
Correct. The complaint itself, though, had alleged a seizure by the court system. And so the district court concluded properly, we think, that that was a frivolous claim. And so if the investigation was based on reasonable suspicion, if all of the other components of the constitutional protections that a juvenile in need of protected services is provided under federal law, and if all of those protections are guaranteed, why on earth should it turn into an equal protection claim? And we think that that's consistent with what this court ruled in Holman versus Page. We think it's consistent with this, what the Supreme Court ruled in Hartman versus Moore as well. And I think finally, I'd like to turn again to the concept of extending the Supreme Court's ruling in Enquist to bar class of one claims such as this. This court in Srail versus Village of Lyle, which was resolved after Enquist, ruled that in a case where government officials were charged with determining whether to extend water service, that was an ad hoc discretionary decision. And even though the court evaluated that case and considered that it could dispose of it based on the lack of a similarly situated comparator, the court went a step further to say that it also should be dismissed based on the individual assessments that the government officials were making. And we feel that those same assessments that are made by a county sheriff deputy and a social services employee are similarly discretionary and shouldn't be subject to class of one review.
Extending Enquist to this context requires that we go to the full court. Are you really asking for that? Is this the right vehicle, counsel?
Sounds familiar. I don't think we need to do that. I think this case can properly be resolved based on the existence of a rational basis, based on the existence of official justification. I think it can also be resolved based on the lack of a similarly situated comparator. But again, I think that the facts of this case and the facts that we see in the complaint, they burden district courts. And I think that the logic and the reasoning behind the Enquist dicta, I think, is well represented in this case, and I think spells some of the problems that district courts have with dealing with these claims.
You know, I have an old adage, you know, you give someone a little bit of a power and you use every bit of it. And I use the analogy of a meter maid. that's what's really irritating about this case. It seems that you've got local power people who exercised and took way beyond this ever should. And that's why it's just irritating that it's here, but I guess that's not your fault.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I think, Your Honor, I would be more concerned if there were, and I think we would be here on other causes of action if there were other, if there were constitutional deprivations that took place. It's not like law enforcement and social services get to act with impunity. There are constitutional standards.
About Merovitz or whatever, you know, the mayor. I don't know who all the people are. They can allege things, and someone demands that some agency go forward when the person that normally looks at these things is ready to close the book. You know. Okay. Anyway, that's all I get to say.
Isn't it possible though that even though the initiation of the investigation could have had a rational basis, being that there was an adult complainant. At some point, as the investigation progressed, it disintegrated to the point that perhaps there was no rational basis for some of the state actors' actions. And I'm mindful that we're still at the pleading stage in this dispute. And I point your attention, I guess, I think it's paragraph 38 of the second supplemental complaint, where the allegation is that Morowitz was threatening to have DB register as a sex offender. I'm not terribly familiar with Wisconsin juvenile proceedings, but I don't even know how there could be a rational basis to make that kind of threat.
Well, I think, Your Honor, at the pleading stage under this court's ruling in Bell, The plaintiffs have the burden of pleading away conceivable rational bases. And in this case, they simply didn't do it. And I think in this case, what makes this case stronger is that there's not only the rational bases at the front end, but there's rational bases throughout the investigative process. You know, at the front end, we have the incident that's observed by an adult. A couple of weeks later, we have the fact that the other two children that were involved with the incident were presented to social services, presented to law enforcement for interview and questioning. And then, even further down the road, as this investigation continued, you've got the addition of corroborating evidence that comes from a babysitter, saying, you know, a babysitter indicating that DB had acted sexually inappropriate with her while she was babysitting. And so I don't think we have that problem here, because I think that the rational basis exists throughout the process. And again, the process was never taken outside of the confines of what's allowed by law. It was never taken beyond the CHIPS petition stage, which is what is permitted by law. They acted within their authority and consistent with it. There are no further questions. Thank the court for its consideration.
Thank you. Mr. Sigali, I'll give you 2 minutes in rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. The defendant's 3 points that he raised really underscore the factual dispute of this case and why this met the Twombly standard, that there was not only a plausible claim here, but why a claim shouldn't be dismissed unless there's no set of facts under which a plaintiff can recover. I agree with Judge Darrow that there might have been, if anything, a rational basis to investigate, but at some point, especially after the children are presented for interview and say, yeah, this was a game we were all playing, it should have ended there, and it didn't. And there was no rational basis for it to continue. The twins admitted all the conduct, and the additional facts, the DB gets, he got rambunctious with a babysitter, his own babysitter in his house, whose father happens to be a Lancaster police officer, and the babysitter babysat all summer and never said a word except to the police. You know, these are factual disputes, and I understand Judge Mannion's concerns about how not every arrest or every case involving law enforcement should wind up as a constitutional claim in the court system. Judge Wood said in Del Marchal that it's the rare case that should clear that hurdle, and I believe that this is one of those rare cases. This was a 6-year-old child who, again, the boot of the system got put down on this kid's neck.
Right. I mean, there's no question that what went on here was as alleged, anyway, at this stage of the proceedings, is overzealous, at least at whatever rational basis the investigation had at the beginning. It became overzealous at some point, at least according to what has been alleged in the pleadings, but we need some plus factor
sure.
That makes out an equal protection claim.
Sure, and I think that if this was just a case, if the complaint alleged, and if in fact this was just a case of stupid government officials or overzealous government officials, I believe, Judge Sykes, you'd be correct, that probably in and of itself would not be enough. This complaint, the facts of this case, alleges two of the improper motives that this court has noted to bring a case within equal protection claims. The first is an animus toward the plaintiff, and the second is a desire to find a scapegoat in order to avoid adverse publicity and the threat of a lawsuit. That was noted in the Seishon versus City of Chicago case and later in the Del Marchal opinion. So there are improper motives. I understand that Del Marchal was kind of divided as to whether or not that was required, but I'm going on the basis that it is. And that is alleged in the complaint, that you cannot take the facts of this case without taking the improper motives, which are intertwined throughout all of this. Again, the court noted we're at the pleading stage. We would appreciate the opportunity to bear this out in discovery. My time is up. Thank you very much for your time.
All right. Thank you. Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.